Hey, this is John Lee Dumas from Entrepreneur on Fire, and you are listening to Marketing to Crush Your Competitors podcast. Get ready to crush it with your marketing and ignite.
Marketing to Crush Your Competitors podcast, episode 17.
This is the place where successful entrepreneurs share their hustle to get where they are today. Discover how not taking no for an answer led them to achieve their goals. Learn about who inspired them and how they use marketing to crush it in their business. Get financial, spiritual, emotional, and physical tips that are working for them right now. This is the Marketing to Crush Your Competitors podcast. Here's Fabien Raphael.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Marketing to Crush Your Competitors podcast. Today, I'm thrilled to introduce my guest, Dino Dogan. Dino is the founder and CEO of Triber, and Dino has lots of energy to share with you today. So, Dino, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I was going to respond with, like, hello, Fabien, just to turn you into a liar, but I decided not to.
Thanks so much. All right, so let's start by getting to know you a little bit better. So if you had to summarize your journey with one word, what would it be and why?
Zigzag Zen.
Zigzag Zen.
Yeah.
Ooh, okay. Yeah.
The path to success, however you define success. I'm not even sure how you define that. But the path to success, or anything for that matter, for me, it's been very much zigzag. Yeah, from like way back, like when I was in Bosnia, I was there during the war. I was born and raised in Bosnia. So I was there in the early 90s during the war. And like literally like to get water, because we didn't have water out of a tap anymore, right? Yeah. Because Serbs poisoned the well up the whatever, right? So in order for us to get water, like daily, we'd have to run across the bridge that was targeted by snipers, and we'd have to literally run and zigzag across the bridge. Oh, so both zigzag, both metaphorically and, you know, actually.
Okay, so therefore, well, you said that it's a nice metaphor that you do, but then again, you mean that there was a lot of struggle into that journey?
Well, I mean, isn't it for it's like that for everyone, I would assume, right? I used to have a corporate career that was, you know, it was great. I mean, it was really good. You know, six figures working 15 minutes per week. That's not an exaggeration.
Wow.
15 minutes per week. I was in the IT field. I was a network engineer for a bunch of years. I mean, it was great. It was a great career, but I reached a kind of a peak and went a different way. I founded my own startup and started in a completely different field. I haven't touched IT or routers or firewalls or anything like that in like 5 or 6 years now. Mm. And then before that, I mean, I was going to be a rock star before I became an IT engineer.
Really?
Obviously.
You had a group and everything?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We have an album out, I mean, independently released and whatnot. But yeah, I was in bands, in my teens and most of my 20s.
Wow. So basically, I guess, well, during your journey, you had to face a lot of challenges like everybody else, like every entrepreneur. So are there times that you did not take no as an answer?
You know, no is a very interesting answer, you know. I've learned this with girls.
Okay, tell me more.
you know, girls will give you a no. Right? But no is not really a no. No is really a test to see how you're going to react. Right?
Okay. Yeah.
And if you get like all desperate about it, and if you take that no in a bad way, then boom, I just found you out. You're not someone I want to deal with. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. But if you're cool about it, right? And just carry on as if, you know, it's no big deal. No is just a kind of a step towards an eventual yes, and you're not a douchebag about it, and you're not upset about it. You don't feel dejected or rejected. Then the person that gave you a no, be it a girl or a business a type person or whatever, they're like, oh, crap. So this, he doesn't need me. maybe I need him. You know, no is just like a step towards yes. That's been my feeling about it.
So do you think that sometimes, though, being a hard worker or a hustler, you know, like working through no's and being persistent could be a disadvantage sometimes?
I don't think it can be a disadvantage, you know, because, I mean, it takes a lot of hard work to really do anything of significance, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think the danger is in thinking that working a lot is hard work. Mm. Or being very busy is what it means to be like successful. This is in America, we have this notion of if I'm busy, that means I'm successful, right? But being busy, you forget to notice how you have nothing to do when you're busy. Mm-hmm. So busy to me is a bad word. Doing a lot is a bad word, bad notion in my view. If you're too busy, it means you're not delegating enough. Mm-hmm. You don't have a system in place. You know, you can't. There's something wrong. If you're too busy, it means something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So just look at that carefully and don't take busy as a badge of honor.
No.
You know, because it really isn't, man. It means you're doing something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's the danger.
Okay, so during all that journey, your entrepreneurial journey, did you have any moments where you simply felt like giving it all up?
I probably have, but it probably didn't last too long. It certainly didn't last too long for me to actually remember it. The real challenge for me is having this vision of what I want to accomplish and not being able to get there now. That's the biggest problem.
Yeah.
It's like, I know where I want to go. I know what I want it to be, but I can't get there now. I have to get there bit by bit by bit. It's that old saying, how do you eat an elephant? And the answer is one bite at a time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's really painful for me.
Okay, so sometimes you think you want to get there too quickly? Is that what you mean?
I always want to get there too quickly.
Okay.
Yeah. My co-founder and I, Dan Christo, you know, I'm the guy that's thinking like 6 months, a year, 3 years down the road, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's the guy that says, oh, okay, so we need to get there. What's the first thing we need to do? Like, what can we do now to get there in 6 months, right?
Okay.
So he is very systematic and focused in terms of, you know, steps one, two, three. And I'm very focused on what, where do we need to be in 6 months or a year or 3 years. So it's a nice dynamic that way.
Hmm. So you talked a little bit earlier about the fact that, you know, being busy is not good. It means that we don't delegate enough if we are too busy or if we work too hard, let's say. So how would you say you manage your time and what's your secret for optimizing your productivity?
Well, first of all, I'm not concerned about optimizing productivity. You know, okay. I think that's a myth. And it comes from the whole Henry Ford Ford assembly line, right? When the industrial and technological revolution started, the whole notion of being efficient and productive really came from guys like Henry Ford, and it was imposed on guys on the assembly line, you know? And whereas Henry Ford got to exercise his creativity, the people on the assembly line were really used as chess pieces or widgets, if you will, right? In order to accomplish a certain task. So Henry Ford wasn't concerned about being productive himself. He was concerned about being creative. And the efficiency and the production notion of being productive was imposed on essentially people on the assembly line. I just don't want to be a people on the assembly line, you know? So in that sense, I'm not concerned about productivity or efficiency and stuff like that. I'm concerned about being Henry Ford.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Now, having said that, you know, there are certain things that I try to do in order to make my life easier. So I'll give you a couple of tools that I use. Mm-hmm. One is a boomerang. Mm-hmm. So, in fact, our buddy, John Lee, our mutual buddy, John Lee Dumas of Entrepreneur on Fire, he's the one that turned me on to it. And boomerang allows me, let's say I'm negotiating with someone and they say we have to go back to legal, and it'll take us time to sort of hash this out. It'll take about a month, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want to remember to email you in a month and follow up, right? So right. With boomerang, I just set it to boomerang, essentially, in a month. And inside my email box, boomerang just brings that email into my inbox again. And, you know, it reminds me to follow up with the person. Mm-hmm. So that's one productivity tool that I use that's really nice. And I know a lot of people use Evernote. Mm-hmm. I just use a little task pad or notes on my Mac, which sort of acts the same way. Mm-hmm. So I don't have like a lot of productivity hacks or anything like that, other than, you know, just taking copious notes and, you know, using tools like Boomerang to sort of remind myself. Calendar, obviously. I can't live without my calendar.
Of course.
Ooh, here's a good one.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Here's a huge one. So I use ScheduleOnce .com, me or something, I don't know. But there's other tools out there that allow you to manage your calendar. So The way I use it, there's a link. It's like meetme.com/DinoDogan or something like that, right?
Yeah.
And when I need to schedule a call or meet with someone, you know how when you're exchanging emails with people, you're like, we should meet. And the other person goes, yes, we should. And then you go, how does Thursday, Friday, and next Wednesday work, right?
Yeah, that could be annoying.
Yeah. Well, Thursday, Friday, next Wednesday doesn't work, but how about Monday and Tuesday? Okay, Tuesday works. How about 3 o'clock? No, 3 doesn't work. How about, you know what I mean? It's like goes on and on, right?
It's true.
So with the ScheduleOnce, and there's another one, Time something, I forget. Do you know what it's called? The other one?
Time, no.
I forget. But with it, you know, if you tell me, hey, Dino, let's do an interview or let's have a Skype call or something like that, I just, in the email, I say, pick a time that works for you and book it using the scheduling link in my signature.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. It's
exactly.
Done.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So on one hand, I make it sound like you have certain autonomy over and control over what time you choose.
Mm-hmm.
And you do. But on the other hand, I've actually blocked out a few hours every day that I use for meetings and calls and stuff like that. And you can't really schedule anything outside of that time.
Yeah.
And that's been a huge productivity hack for me.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Great. Who would you say has influenced you the most in becoming who you are today?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. Ooh. I mean, you know, the obvious answer is like my mom.
Not everybody answers their mom.
That's a great question. You know, can I use a non-person? I'm going to have to say books.
Okay.
I've learned to read books after I finished school, which is kind of weird. But I discovered the love of reading after I finished school. Books have been a great mentor, great instructor for me. And I love reading nonfiction. And of course, you know, I could rattle off a ton of books that I think everyone should read right now. Things like, you know, 48 Laws of Power by Robert Greene, or, you know, anything by Nassim Nicholas Taleb, Black Swan.
Mm-hmm.
For example, is a great book. It's not fiction. It's nonfiction book. It's kind of a better treatment of what Malcolm Gladwell did with Outliers, which brings us to another must read, right?
Yeah.
The Freakonomics tomes as well. The Freakonomics, Super Freakonomics, and the latest one, How to Think Like a Freak. You know, I mean, these are basically must reads. Mm-hmm. So I would say books have been a great mentor to me and responsible for, you know, who I am today.
And your mom.
Of course.
All right, let's dive into the strategy part now of this interview. So did you already get to some point in your business where you were kind of stagnant or stable? It was stable. And what was your strategy to get out of it?
I always feel I'm there. It's like a constant thing. Mm-hmm. It's never fast enough. It's never big enough. I never feel successful enough. I think the moment I feel like, you know, I've arrived, I'm just going to stop trying and become content. And that's when you really start to stagnate, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I always feel like that. And I always feel, I'm always searching for mm-hmm. ways to break out of it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I've done, one of the things that works, it goes back to books. Mm-hmm. Books will teach you things that you can apply. Books will give you ideas. Books are just tremendous. The other one is breaking outside of your circle of, you know, tribe or whatever you call it, right? Mm-hmm. Your friends, your family, your comfort zone really is what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. And going to places where, you know, where magic can happen. So I'll give you a concrete example. I was actually going to write a blog post about this, but I might as well share it with you now. So one of the things that that works when you're trying to break out of your circle and into new other, you know, other circles mm-hmm. is to bring value to that community, to that tribe, to that person that you're trying to reach, rather than, hey, what can you do for me? You
know? Yeah, yeah.
The question really always needs to be, what can I
do for you?
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So 2 weeks ago, I was at an event organized by the Fat Startup. Look him up on Twitter. It's PHAT Startup, Fat Startup.
Mm-hmm.
They organized a really great event with a VC. Triber, we're in the process of raising money. We're in the process of looking for investors. Mm-hmm. And the event was about interviewing this VC type and sort of, you know, opening up the kimono, revealing what's really going on in the investor's mind. They called it the good, the bad, and the ugly of the investment world, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was no media, no tweeting, no recording. It's, you know, it'll really enable the VC to, you know, open up, right?
Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, it's just an event I went to, right? At that event, I've met a bunch of different people. One of them was this fellow named Robert, who's from PayPal.
Mm-hmm.
PayPal, turns out, I had no idea, has a program called the Blueprint program for startups. It's actually for accelerators and VC firms. So the idea is PayPal will give startups no-fee transactions through VC firms and accelerators. Because, you know, PayPal can either go to each and every startup, which is very, you know, time-consuming and labor-intensive, or they can go to a VC firm that has like 100 different startups and offer this program through a VC firm or an accelerator, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So naturally, they're going to VC firms and accelerators. So I met with Rob, and we started talking, and he told me about this program. And I'm like, dude, I know VC firms, some, I know investors, right? Mm-hmm. I know accelerators. I'm going to, put you in touch. So the next day I connected Rob with like 6 or 7, either accelerators or VC firms. Now, some of those accelerators I have a really good relationship with, right? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter what I sent them. They're going to open up the email and they're going to check it out, right?
Yeah.
But some I have a kind of a tenuous relationship with. They kind of know me. We've done stuff before. For example, this guy from an accelerator here in Jersey. he and I did a webinar last year for CSS. And so, like, we kind of know each other, but we don't really have a relationship, right? Mm-hmm. So I introduced Rob to this guy. His name is Mario. To this guy, and I said, "Hey, Mario, PayPal has this program that would be awesome for your accelerator to offer to your startups." Mm-hmm. Right? Now, this is value that Mario can take to his people and deliver this value that I brought him. Mm-hmm. What did it cost me? It cost me 3 minutes of writing an email.
Exactly.
Right? But I connected Rob, PayPal, to this accelerator, and next time I email Mario, he's going to be way more likely, way more receptive to, A, opening up an email and, you know, looking into what it actually is and stuff like that.
Well,
and,
sure.
And I was able to bring value to them. So that's one of the things that I'm always looking for, and that's... you know, that's like the latest one, but you need to do that stuff on an ongoing basis all the time.
Mm-hmm. So when did you realize that marketing was extremely important for your business growth? Or did you like always know that marketing was important?
So you know, when I was in IT, I was teaching for 7 years. So I was teaching other computer geeks how to become bigger computer geeks.
Okay.
Yeah. And even back then, the way I approached teaching was as if it's selling, you know, because, you know, let's say you're a company, you know, you're Johnson & Johnson or AT&T. These were our students, right? People, professionals that have worked with these at these companies. And you have 20, 25 grizzled dudes that have been in the IT for 20 years, mm-hmm. right? And here's this young punk walking into the classroom and supposed to teach them about, you know, the latest networking technology and stuff like that, right? The first thing I have to do is sell them on the idea that being there for a week in that classroom is not going to be torture, right? It's all sales, right? It's all marketing. It's just... You know, we're all selling all the time. Going back to an example with girls, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you're talking to a girl, you're selling yourself. You're marketing yourself. When you put on makeup in the morning, you're marketing yourself. You know what I mean? It's all selling. It's all marketing. All the time. All of us.
So is there anything you struggle with marketing?
Everything. Everything all the time.
Could you be a little bit more specific?
It's a matter of resources, right?
Yeah.
For us, specifically for Triber, you know, it's 3.5 people running a startup that has, you know, a ton of members, a ton of clients. It's, you know, it's hard, right? So some things suffer. So I'll give you an example. We rarely send a newsletter out on monthly basis. I mean, it's one of those things that we should be doing on monthly basis at least. But we're not, simply because it's like there's like X's that you have to cross out and there's paint by numbers, right? It's like there's certain things you have to do. But at the same, and sending a newsletter is one of those things, right? Mm-hmm. If you're going to do effective marketing and whatnot. But, you know, we just can't. We have to allocate resources to things that matter the most. Mm-hmm. So some other things will then, therefore, suffer. So that's, you know, just allocating resources to do stuff is really, really difficult. I'm flabbergasted when people start fawning all over, you know, Dove had this amazing campaign, marketing campaign, or like Ford, Fiesta, they did an amazing influencer outreach, right? Look at how brilliant they are. Look at how effective it is, right? And I'm thinking to myself, really? So you're telling me that if you hire a lot of really smart people and you give them a bunch of money, they can execute a good marketing campaign? No shit, Sherlock. You know, you can bleep that part.
No problem.
If you have to, right? I mean, of course, you hire a bunch of smart people, you give them a ton of money, they're going to execute a brilliant campaign. Mm-hmm. Duh, right? So yeah. The thing that I struggle with is the resource allocation. There's a ton of stuff that needs to be done, but something's got to give.
Yeah. And so what are a couple of your favorite marketing strategies to promote your business that really help you crush your competitors?
I think one of them is speaking. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you an example. A typical startup will pay a couple of few thousand dollars for a booth at an event. Mm-hmm. Triber gets invited to speak, or Dino of Triber gets invited to speak at an event, gets his way paid, if not paid to speak, right? At least I get my way paid.
Yeah.
Hotel and, you know, flight and whatnot. Mm-hmm. They don't give me a booth. They give me an entire room. Sometimes it's keynote. Sometimes it's a smaller room, whatever, mm-hmm. right? They fill it with people, and they give me 45 minutes to essentially do my seduction dance in front of a full auditorium.
Right? That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and that, you like, I don't have to say Triber. I don't have to. I've done, you know, 2-hour sessions without mentioning Triber once. Mm-hmm. But if you provide value, people want to know who the hell you are.
Yeah.
They found out you're a founder of Triber. Naturally, they're like, okay, what's Triber? And, you know, depending on who they are, they might find it, you know, it's content distribution, it's blog amplification, whatever they decide to call it, or whatever I decide to call it. And boom, they're on the platform.
Hmm.
So, and things like this as well, right? You know, there's people listening to this and they have no idea who I am. They hear your podcast. They might say, oh, this guy is saying some stuff that's not complete nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
What's this Triber thing that I'm hearing about? And they're going to go check it out. And if they have a blog, chances are they're going to sign up.
Yeah,
or a podcast, so true. Or a YouTube channel.
That's so true. So you've said already, Dino, a lot of things that could inspire us as entrepreneurs, but let's go for some more, okay?
Okay.
So what is, from your point of view, the key to financial success?
Rejecting consumerism.
Hmm.
You know, I thought I need a lot more money to live on than I actually do. To me, financial success has nothing to do with the amount of money you're making, although that's a pretty good indicator, don't get me wrong. But to me, it's a lot more important to have a location-independent lifestyle.
Yeah.
So I can pick up and, I can do my job from anywhere. So I lived in Tucson for 2 years. And then I moved back to Jersey. I can go visit a friend in Stockholm for 2 months,
mm-hmm.
and I can do my job from there. To location independent lifestyle is a lot more important to me than the sheer amount of money. And then you have to ask yourself, how am I getting paid? Am I exchanging my time for money?
Mm-hmm.
And most people are, you know. It doesn't matter what kind of profession you're in. You're essentially, you know, if you're a knowledge worker, what they call a knowledge worker, it's no different than being a farmer or being a factory worker. You're exchanging your time for money,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's not very attractive to me, right? It's a lot better to. I'll give you an example. What's his name? Colin Powell, right? Mm-hmm. The U.S. general, military general, whatever, right? He gets paid $150,000 to speak at an event, right? his talk is not any more or any less compelling than anybody else who's in a similar, you know, field or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. He's not getting paid for his time. He's getting paid for who he is.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting paid $150K for a 30-minute talk because he's Colin Powell. You know, and same is true of, you know, guys like Bill Clinton or, you know, name a person in a specific industry of sort of, you know, high standing. And, you know, that can be all of us. There's infinite number of industries, infinite number of niches where you can get paid not for your time, but for who you are. And that's the piece that I'm interested in.
Wow.
Yeah.
What is the best spiritual advice you've ever received?
Ooh, that's a great question. Best spiritual advice I've ever received. The first thing that comes to mind is be the change you want to see in the world. That was Mahatma Gandhi.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great business advice, and it's also a great spiritual advice. So I'll stick with that because I can't think of anything more profound than that.
Okay. Well, it is profound.
So
how do you gain control of your emotions?
Interesting. Wow, these are great questions. Yeah. So I've had some training, let's call it, in Buddhism and whatnot.
Okay.
And meditation and so on. And I've learned long time ago that you know, from the outside looking in, meditation is the art of sitting in silence, right? But inside, you know, if you attempt meditation, for example, you will find that there's a lot of thoughts that are, you know, pop up and spring up, and there's a lot of restlessness in your mind as you try to sit down and quiet yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that happens, and of course, the typical response, especially by Westerners, is to fight that feeling, right?
That's true, yeah.
I gotta suppress this noise, right?
Yeah.
And that's been a very ineffective. That's all, because, you know, if you're fighting noise, then you're just creating more noise,
mm-hmm.
right? So instead, I've learned in Buddhism to sort of follow the emotion, follow the feeling, follow the noise, follow the restlessness, whatever it is, right,
mm-hmm.
to where it might lead, to the source of it, right? And once you discover the source of it, you can sort of look around inside you and examine where that restlessness or that feeling or that emotion is coming from. What's the root cause? I think Winston Churchill once said, there's always a good reason and a real reason.
Mm-hmm.
And people will almost always give you a good reason for doing something or a good reason for not doing something. But it's rarely the real reason.
Mm-hmm.
And you can recognize a good reason because it sounds perfectly rational.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The real reason is always personal. It's always, you know, it has a self at its core.
Mm.
I'm always doing something because of me.
Yeah.
Right? You just have to kind of follow the emotion to where it comes from and sort of scratch the surface, see what's underneath there and examine that and then scratch that surface, see what's underneath there. And, you know, this is one of my favorite quotes of all time. It's from House of Cards. Kevin Spacey says it. He goes, everything is in life is about sex, except for sex. Sex is about power. It's one of my favorite quotes. So and I'll give you an example. This played out in real life yesterday. My girlfriend and I were driving in the car, and she's going through her Instagram timeline, and we see a mutual friend of ours with his exercise gear, sweating, working out, and mm-hmm. taking a selfie, right?
Yeah.
And you can tell in the picture he lost a few pounds since the last time we saw him, right? So I take one glance at that picture, and I'm like, huh, let's say his name is Gary, because that's his name. I look at that picture, and I say, oh, Gary's looking for a new girlfriend. And my girlfriend's like, oh my God, you're right. That's why he's been posting so much on social media and exercising and sort of, you know, doing his seduction dance and posing and stuff like that. Yeah, everything in life is about sex, except for sex. So when you scratch all the surface, you're probably going to end up with that.
Well, that's very interesting, Dino. What is a good habit that helps you physically?
Exercise.
Yeah?
Oh, my God. And, you know, like everybody else, I've been good and I've been bad and I've been good and I've been bad. But I've been bad for a couple of years. And then about 3 or 4 months ago, I got back into regularly exercising and stuff like that. And it's been so tremendously helpful. It gives me more energy. I can do more stuff. I can do more stuff better. Mm-hmm. And just taking care of yourself, eating better. Here's what I realized. The eating habits that we have in our teens and in our 20s, you can't carry that over into your 30s and into your 40s. Mm-hmm. And there's one simple reason, other than you're getting older, right?
Yeah.
We stop growing at, you know, let's say anywhere between like 20, 25 years of age, right?
Yeah.
So all, you know, 3 meals a day and making them big and, you know, high in calories and stuff like that, it has somewhere to go. Like, you're growing. You're a real live growing boy or a girl, right?
Yeah.
So it has somewhere to go. But once you start approaching 30s, you know, you're 30 some odd years old, you're not growing, right? You're not going to grow taller. Mm-hmm. You're just going to grow a bigger gut. So your eating pattern has to change completely. You're entering maintenance mode. You're no longer in the growth mode. Yeah. You're entering maintenance mode. Unless you're like a insanely active person who is like doing bodybuilding and stuff like that. And most of us aren't. Most of us are just trying to stay healthy and look fit and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it took me 30 years to figure that out.
At least you did.
I know, right?
Good. That's very positive. All right. And to wrap it up here, Dino, is there something else you want to share with the All-Star team?
Oh, something else I'd like to share. Yes. You know, I've been taking some notes and sort of stuff I've learned. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's like publishing these blog posts or like, 30 things I've learned in my 30 years or something like that, right? I have a bunch of things written down. Here's a good one. All right. So I was just going down the list and I found one that I think is great.
Go ahead.
Nations don't have interests. People do. And this is a quote from Bruce Bueno de Mesquita. Mm-hmm. He wrote a book called The Dictator's Handbook. Mm-hmm. It's a great book. You're going to learn everything you need to know about politics. And when I say politics, I don't mean like Democrats and Republicans, although yes, that too. But I mean any kind of politics that happen anywhere, inside a corporation, inside a business, inside a family, mm-hmm. right? Because you know, if you have a big family, there's a lot of family politics involved too, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a quote from his book, Nations Don't Have Interests, People Do. Mm-hmm. But it can be applied, it can be generalized across everything. Mm-hmm. Corporations don't have interests, people do. Right?
Yeah.
Anything in life, you have to find, and this really goes back to your previous question, right? What's the root of the emotion? And it kind of ties back into what Churchill said, right? There's always a good reason and the real reason.
Good reason, yeah.
And you have to find what the real motivation is behind what people are trying to accomplish or what people are doing. Hmm. Corporations are not people. They don't have interests. People are people. People have interests. And, you know, one obvious way in which this expresses itself is that when you're negotiating with, you know, someone, anyone at another company, you need to understand that their primary objective is to keep their boss happy, mm-hmm. right? That's likely their primary objective. And this is why no one ever gets fired for buying from IBM, right? Or buying from Microsoft and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It's a safe bet, and it's going to be good enough. And they can't be wrong. If they're wrong, then everybody else is wrong, right?
Yeah.
So nations, corporations, they don't have interests. People do. Organizations don't have interests. People do. Find out what their motivation is. Find out what their real reason is. Mm-hmm. And then if you can give them that, you can probably get what you're looking for too.
Thank you so much, Dino, for such profound thoughts that you had into this inspiration part of the interview.
Boom.
That's great. Boom. Yeah. So now, Dino, where can people can connect with you?
DinoDogan.com.
Mm. Oh, that's easy.
Easy.
Very easy to remember.
Yeah.
All right. So thanks so much for such a great interview today, Dino, on our show.
Thank you for having me.
It was our pleasure.
Just because this episode of the Marketing to Crush Your Competitors podcast is over, doesn't mean your journey to marketing success is done. Go to marketingtocrushyourcompetitors.com/tools right now and download our free guide to the 5 tools you absolutely must have to crush it in your marketing. Download that right away, and we'll see you next time on the Marketing to Crush Your Competitors podcast.